They can be a great people color if they wish to be. They only lack the light to show the way. For this reason, above all, this reason, their capacity for good. I have sent them you. My only son.
My spider senses are starting to tingle.
Just hang on to your lariat.
Wonder what kind of a scene I'm getting into.
And welcome to issue 51 of Behind the Panels, the comic book podcast that has a hot crustacean band. I'm Richard Gray.
I'm David McVeigh.
And joining us for the first time with the studio is Ryan Huff of geekofoz.com and the Beardy and the Geek podcast. Ryan, how are you?
Yeah, good. Obviously, I'm the geek portion of Beardy and the Geek. Although you don't have video, clearly no beard.
No. I think you're the only one without
no beard. Yeah. Today.
So this would actually be Beardies and the Geek.
Beardies and the Geek.
Although I think we might be stepping on copyrights, so.
Probably.
No, that's fine.
You won't sue us, will you?
No, probably not.
And we've got that.
Probably not.
Damn, we almost had you recorded saying you wouldn't. Well, in this issue, before we get sued, what the hell is going on at DC is everyone seems to be exiting and Jon Stewart may or may not be dead. Neil Gaiman and Brian Michael Bendis together at last, The Dark Knight Rises 60 style, Thomas Jane promotes banned substances and the Pope just might be Batman. Then cameos galore in Marvel movies, Aquaman is a ninja, turtle, and Jean-Claude Van Damme for Avengers 2, plus our kick-ass pick of the week, The Deep by Tom Taylor and James Brower. This is Behind the Panels.
In the town where I was born, lived a man who sailed to sea, and he told us of his life in the land of submarines. So we sailed on to the sun till we found the sea of green.
Yeah, I couldn't help myself with that.
Oh, this is wonderful.
That was, of course, an obscure song by an obscure British band, or an indie band from the 60s.
The insects, the ants, the six-legged creatures, I don't remember.
Something like anyway. That. And, they did a song about a submarine. It was one of their least popular songs.
It was Ant-Man.
We've, of course, got a slight nautical theme going again this week.
Again?
Yeah. Yes, we did before. Underwater Welder not too long ago, so now we're back. I chose not to pick another Namor the Submariner clip
to come in with.
But, of course, as we've mentioned, we've got Ryan here with us for the first time. Ryan, do you want to tell us a little bit about your show and what you do?
Yeah, what we do, I mean, Geek of Oz, for anyone that's stopped by our site, is pretty much a bit of confusion about all things pop culture. We can't really decide on what we want to focus on.
Kind of what Geek actually started as well, let me tell you.
So that's everything to everyone. Whereas Beardy and the Geek is purely for Australian comics, Australian creators, and trying to spread the word, the good gospel of Australian comics. Because there is a full-on scene out there that people don't really realise exists. And it has existed for a very long time, well before we caught on to it, that's for sure.
That's interesting because up until now, we've actually kind of avoided the Australian, not on purpose, but just hasn't come up with Australian comics. And we've been doing this for 51 issues now. And this is our first Australian book. So
it was a bit of a fault of ours. But also, I think that it's probably a little bit of cultural cringe when it comes to Australian comics, I would imagine, from the local. And certainly it's true of Australian films as well. We tend to shun the local a lot of the time. And I think, you know, just by virtue of the fact that I was raised on DC and Marvel,
with films, it makes sense. But
Well, certainly the last year of Australian films has not been a great one. But okay. The book we're talking about today is kind of where the Australian comics industry is at the moment, and this is a really great example of why people should be reading these more. But we'll get on to that in more detail in a minute. But the Australian film and comics industry has not always been a shining bright light, as this vintage clip from 1982 will demonstrate from based on one of Australia's longest running comic strips. Let's just kick up the Wayback Machine and go for our vintage clip of the week.
Hi there, Granny. Hi there, Ginge. Cheers, thanks for taking Mum's present round. Hi there, men. Is that you, Megs? I couldn't recognise you without your girls' clothes on. You try wearing a dress more often. It suits you.
Watch it, Keegan. Well, the only way you're going to taste that cigar is when I ram it down your throat.
Yeah, what are you telling us?
Now, Miss Megsy. It takes a man to smoke a cigar.
Yeah? Let's see you smoke it then.
How about you smoking it?
No, you can't.
I bet you sixpence you can't finish it.
Go on.
That's it. Good on your honour, Coogan.
That's it.
This should be good. Coogan got that cigar at Polly's party. Just you watch this.
Here, let me light it for you, Megsy.
I'll light it myself.
Well. If it isn't the little pansy gonna smoke a cigar all by yourself. Where'd you get it, eh? Where'd you get it? Don't answer me back, Michael. Now, you just stand there and watch how a gentleman smokes a cigar.
Meow, meow.
That's right, teaching children to smoke since 1982.
Yes, it was not a shining moment in Australian cinema history, really.
And we've never bounced back.
No.
Let's say a double feature would be that in Footrot Flats.
Yes.
Like, there you go.
There you go. But yeah, that was from the 1982 Ginger Meggs film, which was Australia's longest running comic strip,
but not its biggest box office film.
New, yes. But let's just move on from that dark chapter. That was a last minute clip. I was trying to find something local. I didn't want to go with another Aquaman clip.
That's
but
fair.
That's just...
Although I could have gone for another Namor clip.
Yeah, well,
Namor is good value.
Though we do have Black Manta, which we won't get onto with thing. I'm just going to just move on swiftly through this and have a little bit of this work.
Well, looks like we got ourselves a reader.
Read between the lines, bitch.
This is the section, of course, where we talk about what we've been reading, what we've been enjoying, not enjoying. One of the things I want to kick us off with is a new book out, and I don't know if you've had a chance to read this yet, Ryan or David, by Brian K. Vaughan and Marcos Martin, which is a new digital-born comic called... I've forgotten the name of it already, which is available on thepanelsyndicate.com. It's called The Private Eye, it was one of those things. It was they released it.
This was the one that they released and said, "Pay what you want."
Yeah. They suggested 99 cents. I kicked in a fiver because I thought, "Why not?"
It's Brian K. Vaughan.
It's Brian K. Vaughan. He's done some work in the past that we've probably read. Most recently, Saga, and before that, Why the Last Man.
Yeah,
so
little things.
I think it's going to be. It's like the 32-page comic that kicked off the series. Apparently, it's going to be a 10-issue series or something. So he's given the first issue, "Pay what you want." This is a really good thing. So if you go to panelsyndicate.com and you can go and pay there. Apparently, it did what... Remember when Marvel released that 700 free comics and it crashed Comixology?
It still has.
Well, they kind of destroyed their own website briefly because people were going and they couldn't access the pay system. But people are paying anything between 99 cents and, well, we know whatever. Some people are probably paying 1 cent, but...
Yeah.
You know, still.
Some people are probably putting zero as the amount, but, you know.
But, you
see
know.
See what happens. That happens. So what was it like?
It was really good. It's sort of set in this fictional, sort of distant future where nobody uses the internet anymore. And everyone's kind of like, police are like journalists and the paparazzi are kind of seen as like the private eyes.
Oh, okay.
And
journalistic investigation at its finest. I used to have that. Here, I've got this one. Here.
Best investigator reporting on the planet.
There you go.
And that was just a really good comic to pick up and read. It's not going to cost you as little as, 1 cent if you want to go and buy it. But I highly recommend people getting along to see that.
You had a look at this, Ryan?
No, I haven't. But the whole idea kind of reminds me of, and I don't want to bring up a crowdfunding argument. It seems as though as soon as you mention it, people get their backs up. But Amanda Palmer, who is Neil Gaiman's wife, she did a very similar thing with... not her last album, but the one before that, Amanda Palmer Goes Down Under. Mm-hmm. And she pretty much said, just pay what you want. You know, you kick in a dollar or whatever you want. Also, her crowdfunding scheme just recently, she raised in excess of $1 million just by asking people to kick in what they want.
What's the controversy with crowdfunding at the moment? Sorry,
everyone seems to have a different spin on it. Mm-hmm. You know, that people should cut their chops and try and get their stuff published the real way.
See, I'm actually all for crowdfunding, quite frankly. And yes, I agree that there is grounds for, there's a lot of nonsense being produced out there. But I think for legitimate content, it is an alternative. I think the great success story, this is kind of straying off of comic books, but the great success story over the last couple of weeks has actually been Veronica Mars, where, I forget what his name is now, the producer, creator, basically wanted to get this Veronica Mars movie made. The studios have said no. They've actually kiboshed the whole idea. They didn't want to do it. He still had the rights, so he put it up as a Kickstarter and said, I need to raise, was it $4 million, $3 million, whatever it was, and literally raised it in a week.
Yeah,
well... And it's got to be, it's got to send a really strong message to the studios.
That you can think it's people power.
Yeah, and if Kickstarter existed a few years ago, Firefly would still be on the air.
Mm.
You know? So it's like you sit there and look
but
at
it's
it and
all
go,
well, I mean, in some ways it's all well and good for people who've already got a presence out there to go out and raise money, but it's harder for you and I if we wanted to raise money for the show, for example. It'd be harder for us to do it, but, you know.
Not impossible.
It is, but not impossible. I mean, we see that just recently Sebastian Hawkes was on Posable, or Posable, whatever you want to call it. That was Tristan Jones, Greg McLean, the director of Wolf Creek.
That's right.
And Chris DeBarry. Yeah. Now, they hit their mark pretty much in excess of what they were after, but then you've also got the guys that did Space Pirates, a good little Australian anthology, and they hit their mark as well. So lesser known, but you know.
Also, I mean, the other thing is we're not all looking at trying to raise $4 million for a feature film.
No,
yeah.
But if you were, let's say I decide I want to produce a comic book, okay? I write the script and I engage an artist who comes up with some concept art for it, and then I put it on Kickstarter and say, because I don't want the artist working for free. Obviously, so I put it up on Kickstarter and say I need to raise $4,000, $5,000, whatever it is, to pay for the wonderful art that's going to be in this book. Your goal, goals will be you get free copies of the books, free digitals, whatever it is. You could easily raise $4,000 or $5,000 if you've got the right pitch, and that's the whole concept behind it. And I have no problem with that. I have no problem with, and then having that calling card, you could go to your majors, find a publisher because you now have something to show for it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So I have no problem with the funding this way in any way, shape or form.
Yeah, I've got no problem. I mean, if you don't want the book or if you don't want to see the book printed, don't buy it.
Exactly. You know, it's like, don't buy it. If you've got a product and Dark Horse or Marvel or DC has said, yeah, we'll pick that up, that's fantastic. It's great for you, but it's not going to happen to everybody.
Absolutely.
And there's some great work out there that isn't ever being discovered. And this is a way for it. And there's also going to be a lot of crap. That's 10BA proved that with the film industry in this country, which was, yes, we produced a lot of junk in the 70s and 80s, but we also produced some great films. We wouldn't have had those great films without the junk. We wouldn't have had any of those films without 10BA, the tax incentives. So you weigh the good with the bad, you know?
Yeah. It's fossicking.
Yes. But we're on the same page.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, damn, okay. I was hoping there's going to be an actual fight in here. It's quite hot in the studio.
No, leave that to the internet.
Okay,
you guys have comments or complaints about any of this, you know where to write to.
The other thing that came
Richard
out this week.
Real bit. No.
Yeah, I don't check the real bits very often anymore. The other thing that came out this week that I thought was really interesting was Constantine started. Which
I haven't had a chance to read yet. I've got it, but I haven't had a chance to read it yet.
Yeah, I've read the first one. Are either of you Hellblazer fans?
Hellblazer fan, yes. I'm very hesitant to pick up the first Constantine.
I'm with you, because Hellblazer I think is fantastic, but I think that they have completely neutered the Constantine character in Justice League Dark. And so it doesn't really inspire me to want to go off and read the spin-off comic book.
Yeah.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, this is not Hellblazer going into it. They've done a good effort to throw in a few bloody hells and so forth, and he's still smoking. There's a great panel early, second page, I think, where it's John Constantine lighting up a cigarette and his whole face is illuminated, and it's kind of like for a second you feel like this is classic stuff, but it's basically a sort of a noirish detective story with John Constantine, and it's Jeff Lemire and Ray
Fawkes,
great
writer,
and friend
of panels. I mean, we interviewed him, but even though I really like Jeff Lemire, Justice League Dark is not one of my favorite books. It doesn't do anything for
and
me.
And I wonder how long. I mean,
and of course, the rumor kicking around, I don't know if you've got it in the news, but the rumor kicking around quite strongly at this point, which is that Guillermo del Toro, although we've got to take that with a grain of salt, but Guillermo del Toro is apparently, Jeff Johns has said this on another interview,
doing a Justice League Dark film. Yeah.
So he is apparently rolled right into that world at the moment. So
I wonder how far that'll go, because it seems like it'd be too confusing for audiences to work out the difference between Justice League and Justice League
Dark. I don't
think
it'll be called Justice League Dark.
No, that's true.
I think it'll be those characters, it'll be that storyline, whatever he's doing with it, but I think they'll change the name.
Yeah, I'm very hesitant to put any stock in that, considering how much difficulty they've actually had getting Justice League off the ground.
And considering the fact that Guillermo del Toro has his name attached to every film in Hollywood.
He does.
So it's been a running joke with us on the film show for the last year and a half now, that every time we mention one of his films in production, you go take it with a grain of salt, because it may never see the light of
day. I'm still not convinced Pacific Rim's coming out.
And we've seen trailers for it. I'm still not convinced.
Only when I'm sitting watching the end credits of that film.
Only when we actually see it says directed by Guillermo del Toro.
Not just presented by.
Exactly. So
there is a prequel comic book coming out to that as well, apparently.
Of course there is. There's a prequel comic book to everything at the moment.
Yeah, there's a prequel comic book to this show. You can pick it up.
It's on Kickstarter right
now. No, we'll do our shameless shilling for our Cafe Press store later in the show.
Yeah, absolutely.
Has anybody else been reading anything interesting?
I just thought, before you jump in, right, just very quickly, because I actually haven't read a huge number of titles this week.
Yeah.
But the one thing I did go back and reread, I was talking with Richard before the show, is I went back and reread the Chris Claremont Wolverine run, the 4-issue miniseries.
Yes.
And this is going to be controversial, and people are going to write to us, but it doesn't hold up. It really doesn't hold up. It's I remember really liking it back in the 80s when I read it the first time. Oh, he's about to walk out on me. Really liking it in the 80s when I was really into the X-Men. It's funny, for a 4-issue limited series, which is supposed to be this really, you know, intense series, but nothing happens in this 4 issues. And like they talk,
is Wolverine really angry throughout it?
Yeah, well, yeah, he's always angry though, isn't he? But I just kind of felt like I'm not sure. I think time has gone on and hasn't been kind to that title.
Does he snitch something?
He snicks everything, but he doesn't do it in costume for a lot of it. So. Anyway, so I decided to bring that up because we are doing a big Chris Claremont run coming up. And
yes, and we can say we confirmed an interview with Chris Claremont.
And
so
we've got
that
an interview coming up.
Soon.
And I will talk to him about that, actually. I want to ask him whether or not he thinks it holds up, because...
That's a big call.
It's an interesting call.
We'll have a talk about that after the show, Dave.
Not in a mean way. It's this concept that we talked about before, though, which is comics are time and place. And whether or not, when we look back at comic books now, like with Green Lantern, Green Arrow that we did, and even with the Spider-Man run that we did, sometimes things don't hold up as well as they do, because they were very relevant time and place. You go back on it now, sometimes they just don't hold up as well as you remember them.
Yes, yeah. I think that's true to say about pop culture in general.
Exactly.
You know, they're
definitely
a product of their times. You even look at Dark Knight Returns, and that's very much Cold War.
Interestingly enough, though, I think it holds up as a read. It's very dated in its style because it is set in the 80s, but it embraces that style with such gusto. But the actual writing of it doesn't actually feel that dated. And so when you actually read it, it's actually still a very compelling read. Whereas, as we mentioned with Green Arrow, Green Lantern, which was a really powerful comic book in the 70s, which had some amazing things to say, when you look at it back now, the dialogue, the way it's written, it all feels kind of the way comics were back then. It doesn't hold up in its writing as such. You could read Sandman now or back then, and it's still this beautifully written, excellent piece of writing, you know? Not all of it holds up so well. Some of Chris Claremont's writing, as we've said, he does a lot of description. It's very much a thing of that era of writing, whereas you can see it in the panel, but he's still describing what's happening.
Yeah, it's very much the style of the time. And a lot of those writers that sort of have these classic runs, unfortunately, were hemmed in by the style.
Stanley School of Writing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Right. And let's not forget, when we'll talk about it more when we do the show, that was the return of the X-Men after a couple of years off as well. So just to have them back.
And look, I'm not bagging it out. The X-Men is actually still a really good read. We're going through it now. But you can actually definitely see the dating is on the wall, so to speak. You know, Ryan, what have you been reading?
I mean, the one that springs to mind straight away is Nova.
Oh yes.
To me, it's just got blockbuster written all over it, and for the same reason as what I like about The Deep, it's just fun. You know, like it's got suspense. It's got just, I don't know. It's almost innocent.
It's useful. It's very youthful. It feels like it's exciting.
Whereas I feel as though all of the... And I spoke to you probably a couple of years ago now, Richard, about getting into the galactic stuff. You know, Annihilation felt very grown up. And it, at times, it actually feels a bit stodgy. Whereas with Nova, it does feel young and youthful, and it feels fresh. And, I mean, definitely the art style, it feels almost animated.
And Guardians is going the same way. So yeah, it's going to... The new cosmic... I'm very excited about this new cosmic era that we're heading into.
Absolutely. And I think it's... a good thing about that is that you don't have to know anything about the backstory, anything else. No. It would probably help. But at the same time, it's not necessary.
In fact, no, because we're not even doing the Richard Rider story at all.
No.
So because we're based on his father and not the Richard Rider story, we can come into this absolutely cold. And I think it's holding up very well. The issue two is really good.
It's kind of
really,
like I wrote on the side about this. It was kind of like you got that sort of ultimate Spider-Man vibe, but in space.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a really good point.
Yeah, and you kind of come into this. It's kind of that same sort of the thing that we like about Spider-Man, that he's a kid dealing with other issues, but he's just discovering all these powers at the same time.
Imagination? Is Rocket Raccoon a lot more violent than he was before?
Well, yeah, particularly in that. But he's also a hilarious character. I don't know if you picked up the digital only comics, which are the Infinite comics that they're doing. There's Brian Bendis is doing all these backstories for the characters, and there's one for Rocket Raccoon where he's in a bar telling the story of some great adventure, and no one believes him. He did anything, so it's great. I'm really looking forward to if this is kind of an indication of the tone that the Guardians film will take as well. That kind of really.
When is Guardians 1?
Next month, like within the next week or so. Actually, it might be coming out the week that this show goes out. I think Guardians 1 is out.
I hope so. I'm hanging for Guardians 1.
Yeah, with no doubt 17 variant covers. And one of them by Scotty Young.
400.
Wow, it's like the 90s all over again. Bring back foil covers, I say.
There was Age of Ultron number one had a foil cover.
Really?
Yeah.
I was only joking about the whole bring back foil cover.
It's coming. It's coming. They're doing it.
Oh, wow. Oh. Return of the Speculator.
What was it? It was Justice League of America had 52 variant covers, one for each state. It's like, really? Really?
It really is the return of that speculator market as well. I mean, you look at eBay. And you look at these number one issues just disappearing off shelves and being out for $40 the next day.
Just read your damn comic books.
Yeah. You know what? Stop bagging and boarding. Enjoy the comics for what they're meant to be.
I bag and board.
Saw my collection day.
I'm talking about don't do it at all. I'm just saying don't just go, I buy a comic, I wear cotton gloves, I put it into a bag. That's what these people are doing. You know what I mean? It's like Kevin Smith actually talked about the fact that when he was seriously collecting, he bought 3 copies of every comic book. One to bag and board, one to read, and then one he would cut up to collage with. You know what I mean? It's like
some serious shit, right?
Yeah, some serious shit. You know, and you sit there and go, so you buy two, even if it's just buying two, one to bag and board, one to read, that's extreme.
Yeah. I'm gonna drop a name.
He's gonna challenge it.
Okay. No, I'm gonna drop a name. Now I bag and board, but it's just because I like the way they sit up in the box instead of, you know, creasing over and everything else. But that's the extent of it. Now Kevin Smith, he's an exception to the rule. Stephen Barjo O'Donnell from Good Game ABC. Yeah. Now, I met with him the other day. He pulled out a Justice League comic from his back pocket, like Dennis the Menace.
Good for him.
It was all folded up in three, and as he opened it up to show a particular panel, a page fell out. It was like the tear of a comic book. Just falling onto the ground.
Now that's a man.
And at the same time, I sort of, as much as I did gasp a little bit, you know, put my hand to my mouth like Blanche Devereaux, but I kind of appreciate the fact that
he enjoys his comic book.
You know, he digs his comic books that much that he wants to carry it around in his back pocket just for a flick. That's kind of cool.
That's my kind of man. He's invited on this show anytime he wants to be.
I'll just have to steal myself.
And I wanted to bring in all these creased up, bent up comics and put them out in front of Richard.
No, I'm doing a Kickstarter for the preservation of comics everywhere.
There's probably 15 of them already.
Yeah. All right, moving on to something a little more current.
Current.
I'm going to hit this button and see what happens.
What a scoop!
What the hell is happening at DC at the moment? Have we been following this news?
Look, go, please, after you.
No, it's, I mean, asking what the hell is going on is, that's a tricky one because I don't think anyone knows
But they've got it mapped out years in advance, and, remember? Yeah, that's look, what they said.
There seems to have been editorial issues for a while. And this has recently exhibited itself in a bunch of stories that have come out this week. Andy Diggle, who was about to start his run on Action Comics, the very last...
And we were very excited by this.
Yeah, the very last Grant Morrison one came out this week.
Okay, 18 was the last Grant Morrison.
So Diggle's written one issue and then apparently walked from the book. And he said, sadly, I've decided to walk away from Action Comics for professional reasons. That was very highly republished on the net.
What the hell does that mean? That is such a generic term. You know, the other term they use is creative
differences. Yeah.
It generally just means... someone has pissed me off royal and I'm not doing it anymore.
Or I wanted to kill a character and they won't let me or something, you know?
The funny thing was, in the day before...
He wanted to put the underwear back on the costume.
To put the underwear back on. Absolutely. The day before that story came out, I'd actually emailed him for an interview request and he said, bit busy at the moment, happy to do this further down the track.
He's got some time on his hands.
And I, in my, I'm cringing now because I wrote back and said, oh, yeah, that'll be good because we'll be a few issues into Action.
Okay, so there won't be any chance of a Diggle interview.
Yeah, this story came out the next day. So, but then Tony S. Daniel, who was doing the art for his Action Comics run, took that over. But then he's now come out and said that he's off that too and he's disappearing after issue 21.
And... Grant Morrison's returning to Action Comics.
But he's very... Tony S. Daniels very publicly said that he feels... I feel bad that he made that decision. He thinks it was the wrong move, but it was his choice to make. Hmm. So I don't know what's going on there. So that seems to be one big controversy that's happening at DC.
But with DC, it's never one's enough.
One's never enough because Joshua Hale Fiakov, I'm sorry if I've mispronounced that, Josh, has walked off Green Lantern books as well. To be replaced by Vendetti, Saul, and Jensen, amidst rumours that there were plans to kill off John Stewart, the Green Lantern.
Who wanted to kill off John Stewart? Was it him or was it DC?
DC apparently. Look, this is a very complex issue, and we've included about five links in our show notes to go through all of this. But there seems to be some kind of struggle happening between writers and editorial at the moment, and no one seems to be happy with the way things are going, resulting in people walking off books. Now, earlier in the year, we had strange things, or last year, we had things like Gail Simone, who apparently
got fired and then rehired. Rehired for Batwoman, Batgirl, sorry. I don't know what's going on at DC. I think DC is flailing.
I think they're imploding.
I'm just saying, comics can't have enough Gail Simone. In my books.
Oh, yeah.
Especially the Batgirl run is awesome.
Incredible.
I mean, it's an amazing run of Batgirl.
I read her Birds of Prey for years and years and years and years and years. It was literally at the top of my read pile every time it came out. So she's, I think they made a wise decision bringing her back. And she was very vocal. She was very frank about that online too, about being unceremoniously dismissed.
Did she give a reason?
I don't think she did. And
no,
I don't think DC.
I'm a big... Twitter follower of hers, and I didn't hear anything about a specific reason why, but I did hear that she was very disappointed, and so was everyone else. Now I can't, this is terrible, I'm just going to drop some information with nothing to back it up whatsoever.
I
read somewhere, it may have been on CBR or something like that, but I did read that DC editorial have said, no, we are definitively not killing off Jon Stewart.
Yeah. That was the last story that's in our show notes there. The DC have said, no, we had no plans to do that. You got to wonder.
But a rumor starts from somewhere.
Yeah.
So they may be saying that now, but a rumor starts from somewhere. So there had to be a seed of doubt planted somewhere about Jon Stewart being killed off to start this in the first place.
Yeah.
So I don't doubt that there is some sort of undercurrent rolling there where people are saying, maybe we can do this. They've got to shake things up. The bottom line is the new 52 came out, blew the roof off the market because everybody went, this is the greatest thing. We talked about it way back when, but it's flailing now. It's not even 52 issues anymore. New. It's stagnating. Nothing that they're releasing post that initial launch has worked, really. And then Marvel's come along and basically gone, this is how you reboot.
It might be time for a new reboot.
Yeah, well, it might be. Well, and I think that's coming anyway. So,
see, the case in point, I personally think that Aquaman is the best book that DC have got coming out
I would have agreed with you early on in the piece. We raved about Aquaman 1. Yeah. We just thought this is for the most unlikely comic book to ever come along. We never thought Aquaman was compelling. And that first issue was so good. And it just steadily went downhill.
Yeah.
The only thing saving grace that it's had is in the last couple of months, that little crossover with Justice League and the Atlantean War. Not bad. And it also kind of brought back Justice League a little, because Justice League was flailing too. Justice League was really strong for its first arc, 7 issues, 8 issues, whatever it was, and then just got lost in the wilderness for a period of months. And it was that that brought it back.
I'm going to say one thing. The first few issues of Aquaman were incredible.
Mm.
But just a little bit of controversy here. I'm going to say that's because they wrote or they created an Aquaman that was akin to Namor.
Yeah, I agree with you. No, I agree with you.
How do you make Aquaman cool? You ride him like Submariner.
Yeah.
You know, except that's the only way to do it. So.
Yeah, except not quite as angry. But that whole, there's a whole arc in Aquaman. Sorry, we're going to have a complete tangent here, Richard. But that whole arc in Aquaman where they were going off, he was with the old team.
Yeah, yeah.
That was just...
It didn't really go anywhere.
It was looking for Sophia in... the jungle in the woods
in the barn
it's like spoilers. It was like that first half of season 2 Walking Dead. You sit there and go, are we ever going to move on? And it had Black Manta with an even bigger head than normal. Terrible. Move on. David, save me from this, Richard.
I think from departures to arrivals. There's been a lot of talk about the final issue of Age of Ultron, because we've mentioned him earlier in the show. Neil Gaiman is apparently going to be co-writing this with Brian Bendis.
I'm very excited about this.
Which not only marks his return to comics, which he's also doing another Sandman later this year, I think, as well, with J.H. Williams III, which will be kind of awesome. But it's also they're going to have the character Angela, which he created for Spawn many years ago. It was first introduced back in Spawn number 9. I've been doing my reading up on this week. And it was actually, there was a legal battle over the character.
I was about to mention this.
Years and years.
Yeah, and it was just basically because Todd McFarlane brought on a bunch of writers. Neil Gaiman was one of them. And he maintained that he owned all creator-owned creations. I could say creator-owned how many times there? That he owns all the characters he created.
One more time.
There you go. Thank you. during that period. But there was a long legal battle. The upshot was that they ended up having a 50-50 split of those characters. But now they're introducing that character into the Marvel Universe, which in the final issue of Age of Ultron, which makes me wonder where this is going.
The irony of this Angela character. The irony of this is that McFarlane left the big companies because he had a legal fight with the big companies about creator-owned comic books, saying that the creator should own the rights. Him and those other people went off, formed Image. And then for him to have a legal battle with one of the creators saying, we own you, there's a real irony to all this. So anyway, sorry to interrupt.
No. And the great news about this is that he also seems to be writing Guardians of the Galaxy issue 5 with Bendis as well. So... looks like we might be up for some... I was already excited about Guardians of the Galaxy. Now I'm super excited.
Super stoked.
Yeah, I mean, a massive fan of Bendis myself.
Me too.
I don't know how this guy gets as many books out as he does, but I mean...
And he just had a kid too.
Yeah, he did. Another kid. I'm pretty sure he's aiming for a football team, that guy. But Neil Gaiman, he's like my man crush. You know, I love that guy. There's nothing that he has ever written that I haven't liked. That's a big call.
I can appreciate that. No, I can appreciate it. I'm that way with Bendis, though. So I'm the huge Bendis fan here.
I'm like that with Rob Liefeld.
And you're like
that with Rob Liefeld. No.
You have a complete distaste for feet. You know, I hate feet. Hate seeing feet on the page. Terrible.
Liefeld, little legs, big torsos. Anyway.
Just like in real life.
speaking of Bendis, something else I'm going to bring this right around, completely out of whack. Have you been reading Powers Bureau?
No.
This is a good read. This is basically Bendis saying, we've taken Powers pretty much as far as we can take it, so let's take it in a different direction, and basically has them all now with the FBI. And so it's now they're still doing the same thing, but with a very different set of toys. And it's up to its second issue. It's well worth having a look at. So still the same tone, same everything else, but a little bit more.
I still never finished reading Powers.
Yes, you do.
Well, a couple of quick stories. We'll just run through these a little bit faster. DC's bringing out a Batman 1966, speaking of legal battles, a Batman 1966 thing based on the TV series comic. And it's going to be, I'm really excited because Mike Allred's doing art on this, and I think he was made to do a Batman 1966 style
comic. I think
comic.
The legal battle's maybe starting to wrap up or something, because apparently there's a whole new line of toys coming out, so.
Which means we might actually get to see these things on DVD at some
stage. They might actually release the series, finally.
Which would be really nice.
Yeah.
So that's really that's something to look out for. I got kind of excited by that. The other creators that are on this include... I'm looking at the article here, but I can't see it. I think it is professional show people.
Oh, of course.
Jeff Parker and Jonathan Case are the other people that are going to be involved in this.
From Periscope.
From?
Periscope Studios.
Right.
Yeah.
There you go. So do you know their work from previous things? Anything
you
might have read?
I mean, this is me spending too much time on Twitter, but I can only hope that if Periscope Studios are involved, hopefully we'll see some work, even if it's just in pinups or something like that, from people like Colleen Coover. That'd be quite great. I think she'd be a great fit for it as well.
Hmm. Cool.
Excellent.
I love this art.
It's very, very cool art. I like the 60s series for the camp humor that it provides us with now. Things like...
I like the fact that it even put the mustache on Joker.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Because I will love it forever because it gave us this.
I'm entering Batman.
Shall we go into the men's locker room?
And this.
Exactly. Providing us with soundboard clips until the end of time. Very excited by that. I'm going to skip over the next story in this thing and go straight to Free Comic Book Day, which is just over a month away. The other story, it's on all of our sites at the moment, so I'll just mention it really quickly, is that Gestalt, who are publishing the book that we're talking about today, have also got a new series called Starlog X coming out from Kevin J. Anderson and Stephen Sears. So another big title to look forward to, big name creator, and Gestalt seem to be pushing this pretty heavily at the moment.
Yeah, Gestalt are pushing it pretty hard. It's going digital first, and then will be printed later on down the track, from what I understand.
So that's coming out in about June-ish, I think.
Correct.
So one to look out for around then, for people who like what we're talking about today. But
now, Kevin J. Anderson, is this the same Kevin J. Anderson that was writing the prequel Dune books with
Kevin J.
Herbert?
Anderson.
Yeah,
one of the most prolific science fiction writers in recent memory.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I read a whole bunch of those Dune prequels where he wrote with Herbert's son.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So just wanted to give a quick shout out to that, because undoubtedly we'll have a look at that when it comes out. And undoubtedly you'll be having a look at that when it comes
Absolutely,
out as well.
Absolutely, we'll do.
But a homeless Thomas Jane has been promoting Free Comic Book Day. If you look at this photo of him in the link in the show notes, I don't know where he's crawled out of. But his Free Comic Book Day is just over a month away. It's the first Saturday in May. That's where we go to our local comic shop and get free stuff. And usually discounts too, which is nice. The one I'm looking forward to this year is the Infinity comic from Marvel, because I think it's going to be tying in massively into their cosmic universe this year. But here's what Tom Jane has to say promoting banned substances.
Hey, I'm Thomas Jane, and I'm here at Secret Headquarters in Silver Lake, California, to talk about Free Comic Book Day. I think over 4 million free comic books will be given away on the first Saturday of May. Comic books are not only awesome and filled with amazing characters and great art, but they're also filled with vitamin B. And as you know, vitamin B is essential for brain function and nerves and all kinds of good stuff. We're trying to encourage kids to read. It's a great way to get kids to expand their minds. You know, in the 50s, horror and science fiction comic books were banned in the state of New York. I'm of a mind that anything that society wants to ban is probably good for you. So read comic books. Get your kids to read comic books. And we'll all be a much happier place. I'm Thomas Jane. Thank you.
I think Thomas Jane may have taken a few banned substances before recording.
I was going to say one bong too many.
I'm going to go out there and say there's a few things at the government that have banned that probably aren't necessarily...
Asbestos?
Yeah, and you know, like murder and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
If kids want to get into that, though, I would support them. Like, I'm not a parent.
As long as they get the vitamin B, though.
Absolutely. Right,
kids, yes, murder's fine. As long as they're eating Vegemite while they're doing it.
Wow. Oh dear.
What have we got up next?
It's your show, dude.
Dig ourselves out of this thing. The Aurealis Awards finalists came out while we're on topic. Because we're doing an Australian comic this week, I thought I'd throw these in as well. I actually pulled this from your site.
But, oh, really?
I went back to the source, but I saw it coming up on your stream, so...
No, that's fine. I didn't even know it was there.
Well, there you go. the nominees this year for the finalists, I should say, for illustrated book or graphic novel, and Blue by Pat Grant. You read that one, have you? Or?
I have read Blue, yes. It was very good. I don't want to say that I have a favourite on this list, but I do. Well, I did.
Tell us what then. It is then.
Should I read out the other two?
Yeah, read the other two and then we'll have a drum
roll. Cough around the one that's your favourite. It Shines and Shakes and Laughs by Tim Malloy and Changing Ways number 2 by Justin Randall.
Okay, so I'm going to say one thing and say that Milk Shadow Books, they're the ones that have brought out It Shines and Shakes and Laughs. They do some really good stuff, Milk Shadow Books. So if you can track down a few of their books, do that. But Changing Ways number 2 by Justin Randall is something else. It's another one of those books that you read, a really great horror film, and it's one of those books that you read and you think, this should be a film. It should be a film, it should be something. Definitely not animation, but that needs to be on celluloid. Like, he's cracked, you know? Yeah. Justin Randall, he's seriously cracked, like he's warped,
I like
but in a good
people.
Way.
This is good.
In a good way. It's just another triumph by Gestalt.
Excellent. Excellent.
Fantastic. And now Changing Ways number 2, does that imply there's a number 1?
There is a number 1. Number 1 came out a little while ago. So you can definitely get that from local comic book stores. You can get it from Kinokuniya. You could get it straight from Gestalt.
Is Changing Ways as good as Changing Ways 2 by the sounds of it? Or
Yeah, it definitely turns up the crazy.
sold.
So, I mean, the first one is definitely an odd one. You get about 10 pages in and you think, oh, something's amiss, and then you get about 10 pages in and it's definitely kind of effed up.
Cool.
Excellent.
I don't know if you guys can swear on this show.
We actually made an effort at the very beginning of this show where we'd say we're going to be clean, we're going to keep the show nice and clean the whole time. But things slip through, and we've never actually carried a clean tag, but we don't carry an explicit tag either. But if something slips through,
well, matter. I'm a good church-going boy. Well, the Church of Whedon, anyway.
Yeah.
So you know, I'll refrain from saying the F word.
If one happens to pop out, I don't think it's going to kill
me. We played the Red Band trailer to Kick-Ass 2 last week.
Oh, wow.
I think we blew our tag out.
Yeah, I think
one.
So. Although when we did the clip from the pro, we actually did beep it. So I don't know.
That's true.
We try sometimes.
Okay, yeah, but Changing Ways 2 is it's fracking awesome.
Good stuff.
There you go. Nice Battlestar.
Nice Battlestar reference.
The Pope is Batman.
I always thought
yeah,
so.
Yeah, he is.
Yeah,
he wears a funny hat.
Yeah, he's got a Pope mobile
and a cape
Yeah, yeah.
And how are you going to keep tabs on him?
He's you know, really? He's well funded. Lives the life of an international playboy. Well, we're getting closer, but the official Vatican Twitter account, Vatican Communication, which you can follow at PCC_S_VA.
Probably won't ever do that. But
no,
right.
But if you wanted to. Okay. Tweeted this week, holy switcheroo, Batman has grown bitter, more vengeful with the years, and a link to an article on the same topic. They deny that they've been hacked. this just seems to have happened. They said the official response was that it was an internal error due to non-native English speaker with a quick Twitter finger posting the story to the site, which generated an automatic tweet.
Really?
That's awesome. That's awesome because I don't know what's true and what's not.
But so. We know the truth. The Pope is Batman.
He's got some pretty funky glasses, though, I got to say.
He just looks like an older Harry Potter fan.
Yes, he does. He actually looks a little bit like Something Wicked This Way Comes, British actor.
Yes.
What's his name? Bad guy in the James Bond movie. He's in the new G.I. Joe movie. Oh, God, what's his name?
You're on your own.
No, like spitting.
Yeah,
image.
No, he is actually.
I know exactly
you know who I'm talking about.
Oh, yeah, that's right, because he was in Tomorrow Never Dies, right?
Yes. British actor.
He is. That was the first thing I thought of when I saw him.
He looks like an older version of him.
If only we had some sort of vast interconnected series.
Absolutely.
Of
I love that actor too, and I can't believe I've forgotten his name. It's just gone out of my head. Poof.
Well, I'll look it up while we're talking. It's not Pierce Brosnan.
No, it's not Pierce
but
Brosnan.
But while I'm hitting this button, I can look up the actor because we can move swiftly and say it was Jonathan Pryce.
There you go.
Jonathan Pryce.
And no one will
correct.
Know that we didn't know that.
Jonathan Pryce. Oh,
because we edit everything in post.
With a Y as well, because I just saw that.
Yeah. He played the character, if I remember this correctly, of Elliot Carver.
Now you're just cheating.
Now I'm cheating. Movie news. Like, I don't actually have a link for this, but the Ant-Man concept video footage.
Nobody has a link for this. Apparently it went up, and within an hour, Disney had completely eradicated it from the net. So it's good work. I didn't think you could do that on the internet nowadays.
No, but it looked. I managed to see it before it got taken down. It looked pretty good.
I have not seen it. I've heard about it. I have not seen it.
I was too late.
Me too.
It was kind of what they described at coming out of Comic-Con, I think it was.
I think it's that same footage.
It's that same footage where, you know, a guy was in full Ant-Man costume growing and shrinking and growing and shrinking and punching out guards and going in someone's hair and ear and stuff. It was kind of cool. So
My question is, why has it taken this long to leak online? So that's the most bizarre part of this whole
Disney.
Story.
It's Disney. The mouse was sleeping.
Disney managed to get it offline really fast. And the mouse when they pull it down, they pull everything down. So they're good at that.
Speaking of Kick-Ass 2, John Romita Jr. and Mark Millar are going to cameo in the movie. If you follow the link in our show notes, you'll see a picture of them in costume.
If it ever loads. Which is, there it is.
there they are, looking kind of cool. John Romita Jr. has got some sort of devil
I'm trying to figure out what he's supposed to be doing there.
No, I don't know what it is. I don't know. I'm assuming there's a scene where everyone is in costume towards the end of that thing. Which should be kind of cool, but that's something I threw in. Robert Redford.
I heard briefly about this the other day.
Apparently he's being cast in Captain America, the Winter Soldier. I don't know as who. I don't know if Chris Evans has dropped out and they've looked for the next best thing.
It's an older Captain America.
Something went wrong in the thawing process.
Look, he's going to be a bad guy or he'll be a general or something.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, I really hope they don't cast him as like a Russian agent, because I don't think Robert Redford could do it.
Surely he's got to be some sort, like you said, a general or something like that. He's still got that all American look.
He's gonna be the equivalent of William Hurt in the Hulk. Yeah. He'll be some general, not Thunderbolt Ross, of course, but he'll be some general who's issuing orders. Basically, he's perfect for that sort of role. I'm surprised he's lowering himself to do it. Quite frankly. This is Robert Redford, the darling of indie cinema and Sundance.
And running, as they say in this article on Deadline, running his Sundance empire.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is now international.
True. So, I have no problem with these power player cameos. I think they're kind of fun.
I think it'll be cool. I'm looking forward to everything Marvel has out, including Guardians of the Galaxy, which we're a tiny bit excited about. Mm-hmm. I threw this one in for you, David. Brian Muir is working on Guardians of the Galaxy. He's the guy who carved Darth Vader's mask.
So what's he carving now?
Yeah, people are speculating possibly Star-Lord's mask.
Good point. Yes. Good point. Yeah,
they've got to nail that.
In the concept art, he is wearing that helmet and mask. So.
Yeah. But then again, I mean, you've got Groot.
Yeah.
Which really just...
Groot will be CG, though. I mean, he'll be completely CG.
Well, yeah.
I am Groot!
Sorry. There he is.
Now, I will put money down to say that Groot will be fully CG. Same with Rocket Raccoon.
Sad, but
wouldn't you love to see a puppet Rocket Raccoon?
Yes.
I'd like to see a Henson-created...
No, I want to see like a really badly done puppet Rocket Raccoon just and never explained.
Yoda, episode one.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
A sock with little
eyes
with little eyes sewn onto it.
But, and you can actually see Jason Statham just off screen
going
holding
right.
The sock. Yeah, that's well, I'm assuming that's what's gonna happen.
Would you like to join our campaign? We're doing a campaign. We believe that Ray Winston should be the voice of Rocket Raccoon, and this has to happen. We call it Rocket Ray.
Rocket Ray.
We
want
to do hashtag Rocket Ray.
Yeah, I'm behind that. But I mean, I personally think Ray Winston's true calling is just, I mean, that's him. It's his physique. I think that he should just be Rocket Raccoon.
In a costume.
Yeah.
In a costume.
Oh, yes.
Not even the voice.
He just wear a teddy bear costume, you know, like an Ewok type costume, you know.
That but uniform with a doesn't face. Quite fit.
Yeah, it doesn't quite fit. Oh, man, you're onto something. There you go.
If that's the vibe they're going for with this film, I'm all right for it.
Yeah.
I'm there regardless.
And Groot should be one of the trees from the original Wizard of Oz. One of those, you know, the apple throwing trees.
Yes.
You know? There you go.
Yeah.
Guy in a costume.
Quite camp.
Or really just call the guys in New Zealand. I'm sure there's an ant around somewhere that you can pick up from Lord of the Rings.
Aquaman's a Ninja Turtle.
Pardon?
Aquaman is a Ninja Turtle. Another Deadline story has been released that Alan Richson It's hard to say. Alan Ritchson, who was in Hunger Games, he's actually going to be in Hunger Games Catching Fire. He's best known for playing Aquaman on Smallville.
Stellar actor.
Yeah.
I say sarcastically.
Well, he's been cast as Raphael. So this thing's getting getting big. We've got Megan Fox as April O'Neil.
Because with this particular actor, it's his voice that I'm going to be casting.
Yeah. Mm.
I have a problem with that. I'm sorry.
Yeah, look, I'm in no way excited about the Ninja Turtles film.
No, as soon as I found out they were from outer space, I wasn't excited, and produced by Michael Bay. So that's when I lost interest in this
film.
Don't
care about them being from outer space so much, but the...
I do.
Yeah.
I do.
Purist. Kevin Eastman's coming out here, I think, later in the year.
Where's the... and I believe...
We need the ooze. We need the...
Well, where's the mutant part of it?
Exactly.
But they're not. They're teenage, or maybe not even teenage. Maybe they're middle-aged. Alien Ninja Turtles.
My theory is that they're more powerful under a yellow sun.
Well, that stopped the conversation. Yeah.
I'm just trying to figure out who's going to get sued for that. I will say there's one way that they can redeem themselves, and that will be to have Corey Feldman as Donatello.
I agree. Bring back at least one of the originals.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
Okay.
Way to go, dude. Right.
Well, if that's got you excited, Jean-Claude Van Damme wants to be in the Avengers too.
Let him want it all he wants.
Hey, guess what? So do I. So, you know, want to all you want, buddy.
He posted on his Facebook page, and this has got quite a response. He said that it was my pleasure to meet Mr. Stanley. I don't do Jean-Claude Van Damme, so I'm just going to read this out.
I don't do Van Damme, but I will say that I saw one clip with him, and here we go. Here's your explicit tag. I remember watching, it was a making of Street Fighter way back in the day, and his accent was so thick that he was talking about what a wonderful movie it was, and at the end of it he goes, "Go watch it." I just went, pardon, what did you just say?
Yeah. He's tagged virtually everybody he possibly can in an attempt to get attention to this thing in this posting, but he says he loves Chris Hemsworth, and he'd be fun to play one of his amazing comic book characters.
He'd like to play with Chris Hemsworth what?
I think he'd like to play with Chris Hemsworth characters.
Oh, okay.
By the way, I'm a big fan of Marvel superhero Silver Surfer, and also another heroic fictional character known as Doc Savage, the Man of Bronze. So forever will...
I tell you what,
Jean-Claude Van Damme be the Man of Bronze.
Here's my advice. Go learn to act, and then maybe they'll cast you.
You're being unfair.
I'm sure there's something that he could do the splits between.
Avengers Isn't he too 2. Old for the splits now? Really,
no, didn't he do them in the Expendables 2?
Yeah, I believe he did.
He tried.
Expendables 2, my... goodness. Like the saddest thing about that film, not just that it was made.
When he took his sunglasses off and you could see the bags around his
eyes. That was quite terrible.
Yeah, that was terrifying.
But the fact that two stuntmen died making that
film.
And I'm making, you know, I'm making those quotation marks in my fingers there.
But it did have the best quote of the year, though, which was the Chuck Norris quote where he said, "I heard you were bitten by a cobra." He goes, "I was. And after 4 days of writhing pain, the snake finally died."
Yeah. I just thought I want to see a whole movie with Bruce Willis and Arnold Schwarzenegger driving around in a little car.
Trying to banter. Oh, man, that was embarrassing.
That movie would be brilliant. Mm. He should be the third person in the Twins sequel.
We just need to cast Arnold Schwarzenegger in G.I. Joe because then we got everybody else in there.
That's true, actually.
Yeah, G.I. Joe 3 will just be Expendables 3. I'm thinking.
Merging, crossing the streams. He's crossing the streams, Richard.
Well, at least that might give Dan Aykroyd something to do then, because he's desperate to make something part 3. I think it's time that I hit this button and we start talking about this book called The Deep.
Okay.
Well, see how you like this.
What is it, Batman?
Whatever it is, it's awfully funny.
It's the pick of the week.
And for once, it's right.
Yes, it is. It is awfully funny.
It is.
Ryan, you're the guest person in this seat thingy microphone. What's it that we're doing here this week? Why don't you kick us off? The Deep. Introduce us to the concept.
The concept, basically, it's just a family of four, mother, father, daughter, son.
Don't forget fish.
They and the fish, yes, have faith in the fish,
yeah.
Now, basically, it's just this family of aquanauts that get around. They're called the Nectons. And they just get around in their submarine and sort of solve mysteries. And that's it.
It's pretty straightforward. Look, the thing that I noticed about this book straight off the bat is, as much as the title may want you to think, it's not deep at all. There is no. It's lightweight, fun fare. But this was a great time.
Yeah, you know? Absolutely. I mean, I will say though that there is a little bit more to it. If you want to dig deep, but at the same time, you just enjoy it for what it is, and it's incredible fun. I mean, you can look at it and you can say, well, there's a African American father, and there's a, you know, there's a Japanese American mother, and the kids are a mixed race, and you can look at that and see, well, you know, it's sort of the proliferation of mixed race families, and it's saying that it's okay to be successful and an ethnic minority. Or you could just say, like, they seem like a very nice family.
They're a nice family, exactly.
You know, they're a good, well-adjusted family, and just leave it at that. You could look at it and think, well, they're commenting on the environment and how we should look after the oceans. Or you could just look at it and have fun with it. And that's the thing that I love about this, is that you don't have to look for anything else. Mm. It's just the one thing that I compare it to all the time is sort of Ben 10 crossed with Sequest DSV.
The first thing that came to my mind when I was reading this was it feels like Tintin when I was 10.
Yeah,
it's the just, sort of Tintin-ish type adventures. It's just out there for the fun of it, you know?
Yeah, for sure. And it's classic all ages. Anyone that knows me or knows me well enough, they will have heard me banging on about Thor, the Mighty Avenger. Absolutely love that book. Great all ages thing. But this is like proper all ages where there's no real conflict. You know, no one gets punched or anything like that. In the first volume, there's something scary. And that's pretty much it. Mm. You know, it's finding out what that something scary is.
But something scary is good.
That is good. You know? It's wholesome.
It's one of the things that we've lost. And when we equate this to family films, we look back to the 80s and we look at that golden era of what we considered family fare, and we had films like The Goonies and Gremlins and E.T. and so, and you look at these and go, they were thrilling. They weren't talking down to kids. They were basically telling a story that all ages could go see. Sometimes it would be a little bit scary. Sometimes it would be a little bit action, but it wasn't going to traumatize anybody. Yeah. But it's fun to be scared, you know. And this book, especially the first one, I felt really captures that. It really captures the idea that it's. Anybody can pick this up and read it and we'll get something out of this book. And you're right. There is a part in it which is actually quite scary. There is the potential loss, you know?
Yeah.
I liked it. I liked it a lot for that reason.
Yeah, there's not much not to like about it. I mean, the art is fantastic. James Brewer, he's this guy that if you Google him, you will not find him. He's just like a phantasm. I don't know how this guy actually gets anything done without being on the internet. Whereas Tom Taylor, if you Google Tom Taylor, he's everywhere. Like this guy, he's kind of Australia's mini Joss Whedon sort of thing. He's just he's everywhere at the moment. He's touching on every book. He's you know, I mean, there's the whole Injustice thing. He's everywhere with that. You know, he's been doing Star Wars stuff as well. I mean, he was writing Darth Maul and Boba Fett, like two of the most iconic Star Wars characters at the same time, no less. And then The Deep, which speaking of the Aurealis Awards earlier. Hebe Dragons won last year. So, I mean, this is some really top quality fare.
Mm. Now, I was looking at your site. This is being expanded into a TV show.
It is, yeah. The rights have been picked up by Technicolor. Previously American, I believe they've been bought by a French company nowadays. But it has been picked up. And actually, as we record this, the big Melbourne All-Star Comics launch is going on where the first look at the animation will actually be released.
Now, it's CG or cell animation?
Completely CG.
Completely CG. Okay.
Which, I mean, I'm a big fan.
It lends itself for it.
Yeah, it does, yeah. I mean, and that's the one thing. You open up the book, you look at it, and it's just, it screams out that it should be animated, you know? It's, but then again, it also screams out that it should be action figures and it should be a family film like Spy Kids or something like that, you know. It's just do it all. Do whatever you want, Gestalt, and I'll give you all of my money or just my bank details and you tap in whenever you want. But yeah, so I mean, definitely have a look for that as well, the first little look at animation. Technicolor do some pretty good stuff as well, so hopefully it'll be of the standard of, you know, like the new Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, which it's pretty great quality for a CGI series, but yeah, I'm always a fan of cell animation.
Yeah, well, look, when I first read your site and I heard it was being turned into an animated series, I thought, oh, it's probably going to be cell animated because you can see that in the characters.
It's beautiful art, yeah.
When we find out that it's CG, as Richard pointed out, you go, the angular design of everything
screams out that it'll
be CG beautiful.
Yeah, and one thing that that really kind of surprised me, because I have read through both of these books quite a lot, you read through it and there's actually quite a lot in the middle of the first book where it's just blackness. It's just void of color. It's in, you know, the bottom of the ocean, down sort of Mariana Trench style. Yet it's still somehow, it's still gripping and it's still, I don't know, James Brewer, he's a real talent that needs to...
There's a couple, throughout the book, there's actually a couple of times where you'll have literally the ocean as a page, as you were saying. So it's just like it's hints of blue and then the fish just down in the bottom corner doing what the fish is doing. And you're drawn straight to that vibrant color of the fish on that page. And you suddenly go, what could have been a wasted page is suddenly something dynamic.
Well, something that we don't see very often in comics, it's sort of the use of negative space, where a lot of the time it's just thrown in your face and it's like, look at all the awesome stuff and look at the massive splash pages with 8,000 things on it. Whereas with this one, they've used it a lot more subtly. And I kind of, like, I feel as though this book's nutritious. It sounds stupid, but there's so much junk food out there, which isn't a problem, you know. Like, you can have junk food, but this is the kind of food that just makes you feel good, you know. After you absorb this book, you just feel good.
Yeah, I can see that. Richard, we haven't heard from you.
I've just been letting our guest talk. It's far more interesting, I mean, and far more versed on this book than I am, but... The thing I agree with most strongly is that it's so rare to find a book that is written specifically for that all ages audience. Yeah. And that's the thing I really love about it. And I really love that this is, you go in and you do have to put on a different hat reading this if you have been reading nothing but, you know, your Capes books or your mature readers line. Yeah. And, you know, like us, we read, you know, Image stuff and mixed in with DC and Marvel and what have you. Then to read something like this, which is pure unadulterated fun for a family, you do have to kind of shift gears a little bit because you can't look at it in the same way that you would look at it, look at a series where...
Get Jiro,
yeah. Or, you know, even the fact that... And this is the sort of thing that Fox News was complaining about when Batman and Catwoman got it on at the end of issue one of... Catwoman, was it?
Catwoman,
You know, the idea that there's this concept of what comics should be in a lot of people's minds, and when they deviate from that, that's when people get moral outrage about comics. But in reality... I won't hit the button. But there's a real... you know, comics have changed a lot in the last 20, 30 years and gotten darker. And it seems to be that certainly mainstream comics are catering more and more to people our age than they are to a younger audience. But let's face it, we're not going to be around forever and someone has to carry the baton on for comics. And it's great to see that somebody's writing something for an audience that will get in. And, you know, as our good friend Thomas Jane said earlier on, you know, something that will... This is your vitamin B for kids. As you said, this is your nutritious vitamin B for a younger audience. And I love the art and I love the story is just the sort of stuff that I would read when I was a kid, those adventure stories. Yeah. This is the other cross that everyone's mentioned is that kind of Fantastic Four meets Jules Verne kind of adventures. Well, comparison is an obvious one because of... the submarine to it as well. But really, at the end of the day, this is a fun story with well-written characters who are likable. You actually want to spend time with these characters. That's the half the challenge. And that, you know, in such a slender volume too, when you look at it, we're only talking about an 80-page book here.
My only complaint about these books is that they're really fast reads.
Yeah, and
I wanted them to go on. But again, more.
That's the consequence of writing for a younger audience. Yeah. They're going to be a bit smaller, they're going to be a bit lightweight.
Not going to be as wordy.
But you get so much out of them. That is an epic. In that 80 pages, we have like an epic two-hour movie in there, you know.
But I think that's sort of that's a pat on the back to Tom Taylor, the fact that he can give you so much with so little words, you know. It's not, you don't have just panels and panels of text, you know. And I love Bendis, don't get me wrong, but at times you can get bogged down in text. And that's something that he's like a bizarro Bendis.
Yeah.
Where there's so much less said. But what you were saying before, Richard, about this being a good wholesome book, and it is a good wholesome book, the thing that I love about Gestalt is that they haven't limited themselves to that. They haven't said, well, the Deep's a hit, so let's just do more of that. I mean, you've got some really messed up stuff with The Eldritch Kid, which is fantastic read as well, but that's dark and gritty and Torn.
Torn, yeah, I was going to say. Yeah.
I mean, Torn is that's one of my favorite books, because it wasn't until the second time that I read it that I kind of started to get it. It's the reverse of a werewolf story.
Oh, interesting.
You know, so it's not it's not a man that becomes a beast; it's a beast that becomes a man. So, I mean, that in itself was sort of, that was an interesting read for me. But then you got some quirky stuff in Vowels and I think it's Waldo's Hawaiian Holiday, I think it's called. I can't remember, but there's some fantastic books out there. Vowels is awesome. The Deep's awesome. Changing Ways, it's brilliant. And then, yeah, we've got Stalag X coming up that all sort of hit the science fiction button for them as well. So everything that they do is good. I'm going to gush about them. I'm not being paid by them, I guarantee.
Although we should give a shout out to Madman and Gestalt for providing our review copies of these.
Yeah, absolutely.
This issue. But yeah, if you get along to gestaltcomics.com and the link, we'll put the link in the show notes. A lot of this stuff's available digitally as well, which is great.
Yeah, it is. A lot of it is. And they've actually got more available digitally than they do in print. So
for a small publishing house, that actually probably makes sense, because it's a lot cheaper to produce out.
Yeah, it is. And I think that, with Stalag X starting off as digital, and it seems to be the way, I mean, Marvel are doing it, DC are doing it as well, mm-hmm. Digital first. It's a good way to gauge public opinion as well. You know, if you've got X amount of people that are reading it, it's well received, then perhaps then you can move on to a print run as
DC
well.
DC should probably take a lesson from this and stop printing stuff and putting digital first, because of the rate that they're cancelling stuff.
But then you couldn't do 52 variant covers on an otherwise average book.
And just on that DC thing, what is with their charging $1 US actually for a digital code in the book?
I know. It's shocking.
It seems crazy to, if I was working at Marvel, I'd be wringing my hands together. You know?
I think they are. I think Marvel is basically sitting there going, keep doing what you're doing, DC.
Marvel have sat there and they pretty much used, I know when everyone was blowing up about $3.99 comics, they said, well, we're going to put a digital copy into every $3.99 comic. So don't panic, everyone. It's okay. Mm. And that may or may not have been a way of them covering their asses. But now DC, I don't know if they've just thought, well, everyone's forgotten about that. So what we'll do is we'll charge them a dollar extra. Well, Marvel aren't.
Also, think about this, though. Just on a purely economic level, Marvel giving you a free code for a digital comic book, which they get an extra dollar on the cover price of their comic book, basically, let's say. They don't say they are, but you know, they're saying they're giving it to you for free, means that they waive the 30% fee that would normally go to Apple. Because you're not actually buying it through the Apple Store. Uh-huh. So they make that dollar.
I see. Now, one way that I do look at it, nothing's free. You know, you're getting charged for everything. But at the same time, I mean, what is it? Superman Unleashed is a cover price, $4.99 or $5.99 with a digital code.
Mm-hmm.
That's a big one.
And they're making a lot of profit on that, because once again, they're not paying the royalty, the percentage fees to in-line purchase.
Yeah.
Because it's just a code rather than being an actual purchase.
And on the other hand, if you went to gestalt.com, you're going to be giving the money directly to them.
Exactly.
That would be very important. So, yes.
And you know what? These are some. I've spoken to all the guys at Gestalt, and I've spent time mostly drinking with a lot of their creators. But they are honestly like some fine, hardworking folks. You know, you don't get the attitude. They're just doing it because they love it. And. There's some really hardworking people. Not saying that the big two don't have hardworking people as well, but yeah, the Gestalt guys are really great.
Some of the creators that some of you might recognize from their list, people like Kevin J. Anderson that we've mentioned before, James Brower, artist here, Andrew Constant.
Who I'm pretty sure is part Viking. That man is a mountain. Yeah, but at the same time, he's the friendliest Viking you'll ever meet. Lovely guy.
And so he's done. He did Torn.
With Nicola Scott. She jumped on for the first part of Torn as well. Nicola Scott, DC favorite.
Mm-hmm. Also a Sydney girl.
Sydney girl, yeah. Mm-hmm. And another one. He's like a Viking. She's an Amazon. She's lovely, tall, but beautiful. Like another fantastically wonderful person.
Fantastic. So go and check out their website for a list of all the creators on there as well. But look, I think definitely one to watch.
We should also make mention about with The Deep, just going back to the comic book, it's also extraordinarily funny. And we should point out that it actually made me laugh out loud on the train while I was reading it.
The second volume even more than the first.
Yes, very much so.
Some great lines from Ant in there going through. I was laughing out loud myself.
I think the whole when he would say, okay, family, let's sail.
Set sail.
Yeah. the daughter. Is that the thing we're doing now?
Yeah, I mean, and definitely the relationship between the two is so much fun. And I mean, you sort of see that in families everywhere where they don't get along, but actually they do. You know,
there's actually quite touching, the scene where she falls.
Yeah.
And he dives in after and says, I saved you. And she's genuinely touched by the fact that Ant saved her.
I'm opening to that page now, and right. I really love, there's a little bit of dialogue he has before that, which is, you headbutted me right in my head. That's the, this is my head. I use it for all sorts of stuff. You know, and I love little bits like that. And then after she's touched by it, she says, it's okay, weapon head. You know, and it's great. And I love little moments like that. And I also love that there's a sense, as you said, it's just a sense of a family that they're dysfunctional, but they kind of work. It's almost like, you know, Chris Sanders had a hand in this, you know, from his Lilo and Stitch kind of.
Yeah. And as well. I mean, I know this is terribly cynical of me, but the world can be a pretty depressing place. Like it can be a pretty horrible place. The news is just full of doom and gloom. So to have something like this, it's just, you know, it's just nice. It's wholesome.
It's nice.
It's exactly what it is. Word. It's a nice book.
But I also like the sense that it's building to something as well. We got these little hints of Atlantis in the first volume, and then in the second volume, there's a little bit more. And
I don't think we've actually been very clear about that in the show. This is actually two books that we're talking about here. It's actually the Deep Volume 1, which is Here Be Dragons, and the Deep Volume 2, which is The Vanishing Island.
Bum, bum, bum.
And so the end of The Vanishing Island really does leave you hanging for book 3, which we don't know about yet. But
and given that this has only just been officially launched, as we said, this weekend in Melbourne, even though it's been on the shelves for a couple of months, the actual official launch of the book and the first trailer for the TV series only came out this weekend, it might be a while before we see volume 3.
Mm.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, it was about a year in between the first two, and I do believe that Tom's been a whole lot more busy as well since publishing the second one.
And if the artist doesn't exist in our etheric plane.
Yeah, I'm not sure if he's a real person. So. I don't know. I think he's just a drawing machine, which would kind of explain why his art is so great.
And but precise.
Just touching on how you were saying how funny it is, you know, we can thank Tom as much as we like, but at the same time it's the art as well, and you know there's just these facial expressions that are priceless, you know, like there's jaws agape and James has done a fantastic job on sort of Vanishing conveying
Island. Vanishing Island with the old man, what's the old man's name again, with the beard,
Pucker.
Yeah, Pucker. But no, there's that one shot where she looks over and he's got the big wide eyes, she goes, are you trying to freak me out?
Yeah, so I mean you can put that on paper just as text, but unless you actually see that image, it's
that image is fantastic.
It is fantastic. Yeah, so overall, I mean, I could gush all day about The Deep, and I have been so far. But
look, it's one to gush over. I mean, there's going to be the cynics out there who go, oh, it's really lightweight, it's for kids. Yes, all of the above, but it's fun, and that's what's really important about it. Is it's something that you will pick up over and over and over again because it's very easy to read, and it's just fun.
Comics should be fun.
Yeah.
They're comics.
And I think this is what is going to lead to the success of the new Marvel Cosmic Universe is the fact that it's taking that light, fun approach. Guardians is looking fun.
And it was always fun.
Nova is looking fun, you know? It's like they're saying, okay, all that other serious stuff that's happening, let's have a bit of fun out in space, you know? Look,
I've used this example on the show before. Like, the younger audiences who are looking at comics, they don't care. They don't look at the author. They don't look at the artist. They don't look at the politics behind who's on this title this month. Oh, he's replaced this other guy and so forth. You know, I've used that example of that kid who went into King's Comics holding up a Justice League book saying, is there a book I can get that I've got all the DC characters in it? You know, all they're looking for is that pure fun element because they want to connect to something. And I think something like The Deep is something that's wholly familiar. It's the idea of a family unit. They can connect to that immediately.
Yeah.
And, you know, having fun adventures, which is something that every kid fantasizes about having. And, you know, and I think this is the sort of book, hopefully, that one day kids will... Is there anything that's got all the deep characters in it?
And
you
know? cleverly enough, I don't know if it was actually on purpose, I'm sure it was, the fact they spend the entire book in their wetsuits, they look like they're in costumes.
Exactly. Yeah,
they do. And all of their costumes are different. I mean, wetsuits.
They're wetsuits, but they've got the logo on the front, and they look like superheroes.
There is just a little thing, like, I know it sounds crazy, but... I can't see tentacles in the same way anymore. I mean, being a lifelong anime fan, I saw them in one particular way for a long time. Yeah. But now it's a much nicer way that I see them.
Turn them back into a wholesome image.
Again. They have, yeah.
unless Volume 3 takes a very sinister turn.
Well, it could. I mean, we don't know how long it's going to take. They may be speaking to a completely different audience, but hopefully not.
This is a book I'm assuming from our positive comments that we cannot recommend highly enough for the three of us.
Yeah.
I recommend it, yes.
Is there anything else we'd like to say about this wonderful, wonderful set of books before we sign off?
Have faith in the fish.
Exactly.
Yeah, have faith in the fish.
Truer words were never spoken.
Then set sail for your local comic book shop and get a copy.
And the great thing is you can get these not just in your local comic book shops, you can find them in probably bookstores and things as well around Australia.
I know, I've seen pictures posted on Twitter from a whole bunch of different bookstores like Dimmick stores and stuff like that have got some really great displays set up as well. So near the young reader sections. So hopefully you should be able to find it in bookstores everywhere. You should be able to find it in Kinokuniya. I know that you can get it online from Gestalt and also from Madman. And I believe with the official launch, you can also get it overseas now. I believe Diamond are distributing it.
That's right.
Good stuff.
Mm.
So I mean, it's not just for us anymore. We need to let go and let it sail off into that big scary ocean and let everyone else enjoy it as well.
Mm. Absolutely. No, I'm glad to hear it's getting an international release. That's fantastic.
Now, next week, we're going to be taking a slightly darker turn. Another kid's story of sorts.
It's got kids in it.
It's a Christmas story, really. It's Happy by Grant Morrison and Derek Robertson, which was a 4-issue limited series that was put out by Image late last year and early this year. I think it will be out in trade by the time the show comes out. And if it's not, the 4 issues are still around. Very easy to come by. But... slightly darker. It's going to be one that's
a different pace than this book.
So it ain't your daddy Santa Claus. Put it that way. Have you read Happy?
No, I haven't. I haven't read it. I haven't been avoiding it or anything.
You're a Grant Morrison fan?
I am a Grant Morrison fan. Like I think where I mentioned, I love the crazy. You know, with changing ways.
I like Grant Morrison more nowadays when he's away from capes, and this is where Happy. He's away from capes, so when he's off doing his own thing, I think he can be incredibly creative.
Oh, there's still rumors of this book he's got coming out, Multiversity, I think it's called.
Yeah, well, there's been rumors about that for a long time.
Some people are saying it could kick off as late as this year. As early as this year, late this year, rather. So it's,
He could be back on Action Comics pretty soon. If they
Well, that's right.
They're kind of running out of writers. So.
Yeah, they are. So
yeah,
I think Bendis has got some free time, doesn't he? He can pop over to DC for a while.
Yeah, I'm sure he could squeeze in another one. Why not?
Well, folks, that's it for another show.
Really? That's it?
I think that's it.
It's really hot in this studio.
It's really hot in the studio. We want to get out. We want to thank Ryan for joining us here in our very hot, sticky studio.
No, thanks for having me. It is very, very sticky and hot, but delightful at the same time. Yeah, I don't know how.
It's a little studio. It's not like the old studio, which was a little bigger. This is a little bit smaller. Yeah. Anything you'd like to pimp out there on the in the old interwebs?
Yeah, I mean, always check us out at www.geekofoz.com for everything. That's anime, that's film, that's anything else that gets sent our way. But also Beardy and the Geek, which is our Australian creator stuff that you see a lot of the deep work and a lot of Gestalt stuff and a lot of work by other Australian comic book creators. You can find us at bandtheg.com.
Bandtheg.
You're actually the second person to bring that up. The first person was Emmett's wife, my offsider's wife. Yeah, of course she had to bring it up. Neither of us thought about it at the time. We just thought, hey, you know, it's shorter. It's easier to remember. But yes, bandtheg.com.
Bandtheg, okay.
Cool. Why not? So if there's a band out there that it's called Theg, then give us money and we'll happily release the domain. You the domain. Until then, it's all ours.
Fair enough. So we've had the geek on, so now do we have to get Beardy on? Is that the way this works?
You could. I mean, he's in Melbourne, but I'm sure that if you guys are happy to pay for a flight or something, I don't know. I think Skype even a horse and carriage. Like,
I think next time we'll get you on again and we'll get him on Skype and we'll have a crossover episode.
Yeah, yeah.
If we get the ultimate crossover.
Could do that. Like although, that. Then, as long as it doesn't become like an amalgam comic.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That wasn't good.
Right. No, they were kind of cheesy.
Batman and Wolverine.
We keep meaning to do that.
We've got a whole bunch of them sitting there waiting to go, but I just can't bring myself to do it. Just do a whole episode
dedicated to amalgam.
There's an Iron Lantern.
There's a whole bunch of them.
Couldn't be any worse than that weird comic that came out earlier late last year, Iron Muslim, which was terrible.
Which I'm fascinated the fact that it had this one issue and then just vanished.
I understand why, actually.
But yes.
Yeah.
So we've got titles like, let's have a look, Spider-Boy Team-Up, Dark Claw Adventures. We've got a bunch of these on standby waiting for this. Superman versus Spider-Man, of course.
Didn't Batman fight the Hulk at one point?
I think he did.
Because we all know how that would turn out in reality.
Yeah, Punisher and Batman Deadly Nights. There you go. there's another one here, which there's Iron Lantern. There you go. Lobo the Duck.
That we have to do.
Generation Hex.
See, I don't understand why they do Lobo the Duck, but not. Why wouldn't you do something with Peter Porker?
There's music in the air.
Peter Porker.
Porker.
Like Spider-Ham. You get a 2-for-1 already. Just put in some DC character.
I think I've got the best one, though. I think the one that made us laugh last time we went through this list a while ago was Bruce Wayne, Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Oh, wow.
That's nice. One of my favorite ones, I think. That music you're hearing in the background is the phone ringing. We're just letting it ring out.
The phones are off the hook.
The phones are off the hook. They're coming at us.
That'll be DC on the line. So before they send the black helicopters down upon Kingsgrove, thank you all for...
The missiles are launched.
Thank you all for joining us once again on Behind the Panels. You can check out any of our other stuff on behindthepanels.net. We've got a hilarious voice message going in the background.
The beautiful thing is that the audience probably can't hear it. So.
That's true, actually. Until next time, keep happy, read happy. And we're going out with closing song Submarine by Submarines.
Oh, we forgot one thing.
What's that?
We have swag.
We got to pimp out.
We're going to pimp our own stuff.
Okay, before we go, if you head to behindthepanels.net, which we just told you to do.
Yes, absolutely.
So you're already probably there by the time we're saying this. On the right-hand side, there's a new link to our swag, which is you can have our faces, not Ryan's. His face isn't on there. But David's face and my face on a mug, on a T-shirt, with awesome catchphrases with like...
Great quotes.
I wonder what kind of a scene I'm getting into.
Like what?
Like, oh, you can hear things like...
you can read on your shirt.
Or you can read on your shirt things like... Oh, no, you can't.
No, you can't.
Look,
what have you done?
Wonder what kind of a scene I'm getting into.
Professionals.
Things like that, or...
Just hang on to your lariat.
There you go.
But not...
You mewling quim.
No. So, but you can get my favorite one, though, which is... Stop, you fool. You're running into the electrical omniverter.
Stop, you fool. You're running into the electrical omniverter.
There you go.
Things like that. So if you want that kind of swag on your T-shirt,
go for it.
And us, our faces, if you can be able to do that, go pay.
Remember, everything that you're purchasing from that store is going to helping support this show.
Because we like bringing you free content every week for you in Hot Studios. But we like to get some money out of it too. And we also have, you know, server costs and things to pay for, headphones.
Storage.
Vodka.
Yeah.
A lot of vodka. Ryan's gone to like 3 bottles just in the last half hour. That was meant to be a month's worth.
Hence why I've just gone silent.
Yeah. He's actually...
it's kicked in.
Horizontal at this point.
I think we've spiraled out of control.
We may have.
Go buy a T-shirt, people.
So here's that Lumineers song we were talking about. See you next week.
I believe submarines underneath deep blue sea. Saw the flags, Japanese. No one will believe me. Ran back to the town bar and I told the people how I'd seen a submarine.